The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have lots to get to on today's program. Some feedback later on at the end of the show. Hopefully, we can squeeze in some emails coming from some of you listeners and some of those who respond to our daily Trumpet Brief. And speaking of the brief, I'll update you a little bit later in the show about some of the stats regarding that daily email blast. The subscription list continues to increase, and we're actually advertising a little bit in addition to just picking up the normal amount of new subscribers that we get with each passing week. Also, we'll spend some time later on in the show on the problem with modern education. There's some a couple of stories, recent stories that tie in, and also, again, going back to the Trumpet Brief, some thoughts that Joel Hilliker had on his brief last night. We'll tie that in to the segment as well. We've been discussing, well, really all through the semester here at God's College, we've been talking about the missing dimension in education, going through principles of living with our freshman students. And when you think about that book, Herbert Armstrong's book, which was last updated and revised in 1981, originally written in the 1960s, and before it became Missing Dimension and Sex, it was God Speaks Out on the New Morality. And I mean, you talk about being ahead of his time. That's Herbert Armstrong. He certainly pinpointed the problem with modern education back in the 1950s and 60s. And then you look at where we are today. Well, speaking of college classes, today is our last day of the semester. And so I have been just sort of thinking more on the bigger picture of what we've tried to accomplish, at least in the two classes that I've been teaching. And that one certainly comes to mind. And hopefully we can tie in some things that I've been going through in class together with just what's happening in our society today. I was telling my other class this morning, the doctrines class, just how thankful I am for the news gatherers that we have in God's work, and for the fact that we truly do get a world view when we watch world events. And of course, we select the ones that pertain to end-time prophecy, first and foremost. But when you look at what the steady stream of news is coming out of the American news cycle in particular, I mean, all of it just revolves around Washington, D.C., and what's happening in government, and what senator, what person's running for this seat or that seat, or who should be kicked out, or what legislation they're passing, or how these regulations, if we get rid of them, will help you, the consumer. I mean, it's all Washington, it's all government, it's all Congress, it's all the White House, it's all the president, as if the government is going to solve all the problems of this world. As I was saying to the students, it does make me grateful for the news gatherers that we have, because there's a lot going on in the world. Of course, some of what's happening with the U.S. government certainly does. It certainly is important to watch. It does tie in with end-time prophecy. But Jesus did say, watch and pray always. Watch world events. Watch what's happening in Russia and China. Watch what's happening in the Middle East. Watch the King of the South, radical Islam, led by Iran. Watch Jerusalem. We recorded a program on that just yesterday, using some of the information we went through on this show last week with those last few programs of the week, just a little over a week ago. Watch Jerusalem, and of course, watch Europe. We're witnessing the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. That's something we've got to keep our eyes on. There's a piece in the Financial Times today. European politics, leaders struggle to contain rising populism. That's really been the story of this year in so many ways. And we wrote about it in the Trumpet magazine, the latest issue, King Me. Leaders struggle to contain rising populism. It says anti-immigration sentiment is on the rise. That's been one of the big stories. We're thinking, too, about the big stories of this year as we gear up for the last program of the year, where we put together our montage for 2017. Some of you will remember just how dramatic last year's was. It's the same every year as we draw closer to the return of Christ. This article says nearly two-thirds of EU citizens believe immigration has a negative impact on their countries. Two-thirds of EU citizens, they now see immigration as a negative thing. Americans might want to sit up and take note. The whole world doesn't revolve around the border fence, or lack thereof, there at the southern part of the United States. Two-thirds of EU citizens, they see immigration into Europe as a negative thing. It says here in 2014, and what these next few stats here highlight is just how dramatic the change is in the public sentiment just in the last 3 years. In 2014, 52% of Europeans believed immigration was an economic burden, according to Pew Research. It says after a series of Islamist terrorist attacks, 58% of Europeans now view Islam as a threat. I mean, it's an economic burden. It's a threat. It gives some stats in the middle of this paragraph about Germany. The rate in 2014 was 29% that thought immigration was an economic burden. 29% just 3 years ago. Now it's 51%. And then it says, finally, it is no surprise, therefore, that in a string of elections this year, here's King Me, this is the latest trumpet. In a string of elections this year, voters have veered to the right. Nativism is now a generally accepted notion in countries such as the Netherlands and Austria. It quotes this Dutch political scientist. Nativism, it's on the rise. King Me, strong authoritarian leaders, leaders that are going to buck the system, leaders that are going to crack down on immigration, leaders that are going to think about their nation first. There's a story in Reuters today about a presidential hopeful there in Finland. And Reuters says, Finland will leave the European Union and position itself as the Switzerland of the North to protect its independence. If Laura Huhtasaari, I don't know if that's how you pronounce her name, but she's a presidential candidate of the Eurosceptic Finns party. And she told Reuters that she wants to crack down on immigration. She's been dubbed Finland's Marine Le Pen after France's National Front leader. And her party's thinking she has a shot in January this year or next year. Gaining popularity. Bloomberg has a few things to say about Austria's new government. We've had a fair bit to say of late about the young leader in Austria, Sebastian Kurz, 31 years old, vowing to crack down on immigration. He's reached an agreement to form a government, an agreement in Vienna, it says, which could come as early as Friday or today, would allow Sebastian Kurz to become the world's youngest head of government and return the populist Freedom Party to power as junior partner for the first time since 2005. It says Austria's drift to the right is part of Europe's shifting politics after a year of populist challenges at the polls. That's been the story of this year. Populist challenges at the polls. including an anti-immigration party that drew voters away from Angela Merkel. It says the German chancellor called the Freedom Party's strong showing a major challenge after the election in neighboring Austria in October. That's from Breitbart, or from Bloomberg, sorry. This one here is from Breitbart, about the number of Jews that are fleeing France, northern Paris in particular, forced from their homes as the rising tide of anti-Semitism sweeps across the nation. I mean, it's seeing levels of Jew hatred that it hasn't seen since the end of World War II. Breitbart says the Paris commuter newspaper, 20 Minutes, documents an internal exodus during 2017 of Jews from, I think it's a northern Paris suburb. I can't pronounce the names. I don't want to offend our French brethren listening in. But they're saying it's emblematic of broader concerns that French Jews, like their brothers and sisters across Europe, are finding it increasingly difficult to reconcile their faith with the changing demographics on the continent. It says, finally, the paper reports that Jews are leaving their homes on the northeastern fringe of Paris to escape the open hostility that French Prime Minister Edouard Philippe on Sunday condemned as well-rooted. And then it quotes from this newspaper, this commuter newspaper, This internal exodus is difficult to quantify, but it is clear that many synagogues in this area have closed for lack of people. There's just no longer enough Jews to fill up the synagogues. They're leaving. They're fleeing. The changing demographic, the flood of immigrants, so many of them hate Jews, and so the Jews are fleeing. This is 2017. This is what's happening. These are some of the big stories of the year. Well, this one, just following up on a story we went through the other day about the combined European military force. This is from Deutsche Welle. It says, leaders of 25 of Europe's 28 members agreed to fund, develop, and deploy armed forces together. It says that the UK didn't vote for this. They're about to leave anyway. Denmark and Malta also voted against it, but all the others, they're in, 25 of them. The move, which some observers had said will reduce the EU's reliance on the United States, comes at a time when European politicians are looking across the Atlantic to U.S. President Donald Trump with trepidation. They don't trust President Trump, so they're forging ahead on their own. And it quotes Donald Tusk. I forget his position in the EU, but he's up there. It says, more than half a century ago, an ambitious vision of the European defense community was created, but what was missing was the unity and the courage to put it into practice, Tusk said. The dream was at odds with reality. But today, this dream becomes reality. For so many years, for so many decades, in fact, it was just talk. There was an ambitious vision, but that's it. It was at odds with reality. It couldn't get any traction on the ground. But now it is. Now it's happening. Now the dream is becoming a reality. Jesus said, watch and pray always. Watch all things. Watch world events. So much is happening. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll talk about the Trumpet Brief from yesterday and also some facts and figures on that. Go through some emails later on in the program and then also get into a study on modern education as opposed to true education. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical. But world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
We've been doing some advertising online to attract more Trumpet Brief subscribers. And so that has helped to boost our numbers from this past week. But overall, this past week, we added 241 Trumpet Brief subscribers. So an excellent week. And I know we keep talking about how that we're right at or close to 20,000 subscribers. We still haven't surpassed 20,000 yet, but we are very close. We're just 200 or 300 away, I believe. So hopefully in the next week or two, we'll see that subscription list pass 20,000 subscribers every single night, 20,000 emails going out with the latest. Or if there's not a personal message written there ahead of the top stories, there's at least a rundown of the daily top stories or the top stories of the day. Yesterday, though, there was a powerful message there from Joel Hilliker on the new American morality. And if you haven't read it, it's posted now on his blog page at thetrumpet.com. But make sure that you set aside some time to look at that today. I'll read through maybe half of it here in just a second. But he's talking about how inconsistent this new morality is, this new American morality, and that you better, you better come up to speed with the way it is, because it's unforgiving. I mean, a career can be destroyed within moments. He says here, the moral mainstream media, the Democrats and even the Republican establishment treated Moore, that's Roy Moore, who lost his election bid for the Senate on, I think it was Tuesday, treated Moore like a convicted pedophile because of allegations from 40 years ago, some of which were proved false. Meanwhile, there is a growing movement to normalize actual pedophilia. And now we've talked about their stories even. There's movies coming out. Movies right now, one in particular, critically acclaimed. A homosexual romance. A young man going after a teenager. So there's this effort to normalize it all across society. And then you see a career destroyed on allegations from 40 years ago that some people wonder if they're even true. Who knows? It says it is depicted sympathetically, pedophilia that is, it's depicted sympathetically in certain Hollywood movies and mainstream news sources. Psychologists and activists are pushing it along the same path towards societal acceptance that they once did homosexuality. Truly moral people don't condemn others for these irrepressible inborn inclinations. He says the new American morality says that all men are rapists and potential rapists and should be feared and contained. At the same time, it says that if one of these men believes he is a woman, that is truth. That is truth. We all need to play along, Mr. Hilliker says. We should allow this man into women's bathrooms, and anyone who is uncomfortable with this is a bigot. Bigotry is immoral. You can't be a bigot. This is the new American morality. It's now moral to allow children to choose their gender from their earliest years. It is immoral to encourage them to conform to gender stereotypes, such as instilling in boys a duty to protect girls. Teaching boys how to be masculine like Christ and to protect women, that's not moral. That's a stereotype. That's immoral to do that. On the other hand, it's moral to allow little children, 6-7-year-olds, to choose their gender. He says here, for a man to prey on a woman is clearly immoral, but if he's married, it is also immoral for him to avoid being alone with a woman, whether to avoid temptation or the appearance of evil, because that would hold back her career. Fornication and out-of-wedlock birth, moral. And woe unto anyone who would try to stop it. Pornography, so ubiquitous that it's readily, regularly viewed, even by children. Moral. That's moral. Same-sex marriage, moral. Heterosexual marriage might be okay as long as the man isn't the head of his family, which is a form of oppression and therefore is immoral. So those are the standards of today. That's, if in case you aren't keeping up, that's the new American morality. And here again, when you go back to what Herbert Armstrong had to say, God speaks out. That was the first edition of MDS. God speaks out on the new morality. What does God have to say? What are God's standards? What is the missing dimension in education? What are they missing in colleges and universities today? One of our news gatherers sent me a story about the crazy of craziest college courses being offered at universities in the United States. So crazy that they're almost laugh out loud worthy. Jokes. And yet on the college campus, I mean, it's very serious to study about vampires and saints and witches and mad women. You can go into the classroom and learn about hooking up, about campus sex in the digital age. You can study about hip-hop feminism, queer lives, queer politics, medieval sexuality. What was it like in medieval times? Transnational sexualities? Is that really a course at the University of Minnesota? Queerness in Southern Asian literature? That's at the University of Iowa. Queering God. You want to learn about God in the Bible? There's Queering God, and there's another one, Queering the Bible. These lists come out, I think, every year. And they get crazier with each passing year. Some of the highlights, or rather lowlights from years past. What if Harry Potter is real? The science of superheroes. Learning from YouTube. How to watch television. That's what our young people go off to college to learn. Mr. Hilliker, at the end of his trumpet brief, he quotes the historian, Polybius, who said, "There is in every body or polity or business a natural stage of growth, zenith, and decay." And Mr. Hilliker asks, "Isn't it clear which of these stages America is in?" Or rather, he states, "It is clear. It's obvious. We're in that last stage of decay where every man is doing what seems right in his own eyes." God warned against it in Deuteronomy 12. He told the Israelites, don't do like the nations around you. Don't do those things like your neighbors, every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes. God's law specifically forbids this. He says it might seem right, but it ends in death. It might sound good, but it ends in death. As I said earlier, this past semester, we've been looking at education. We've been examining what God has to say about marriage and family, about dating, about true education. And here recently in the Principles of Living class, we've been talking about the new morality, the 20th century movements that helped foster this new morality. And the other day, we focused in particular on the intellectual materialism in education. The problem with education and that it's just grossly materialistic. Revelation from God, that's out the window. It's rejected. Mr. Armstrong wrote about this in the Wonderful World Tomorrow book. He said the 19th and 20th centuries have witnessed the absorption of German rationalism into the educational bloodstream, an approach that regards human reason as the chief source and test of knowledge. He says there's been a dangerous drift into materialism and collectivism. God is ignored. Revelation is rejected. He says, finally, modern education trains students to earn a living in the professions, occupations, and vocations, but fails to teach them how to live. It commits the crime of developing the machine, but it fails to develop the man. It doesn't teach them how to live. And judging by some of these courses at the university today, you have to wonder if it's even teaching them how to make a living. This is university teaching or instruction in 2017. Listen to what Mr. Armstrong had to say. This is from a message on the rules of success many years ago. Clip one.
There's something criminally wrong with today's prevalent system of education, and that, plus human nature, is the one reason why we're having such bad news today. Yes, I mean even in the grades in high school and colleges and universities, there is something criminally wrong with today's education. In many instances, children in the grades are not even taught to read, believe it or not.
That's Mr. Armstrong from years ago, talking about what's criminally wrong with education and why we're having so much bad news today. So much bad news. And, of course, with the new American morality, you can hardly keep up with it. It just makes your head spin. You can't keep up with all the rules and the regulations. These are man's ideas. These are man's standards. They're not God's. God's are simple and straightforward. God's apply across the board. Mr. Armstrong said in 1954, that last quote I gave to you, that clip, that was from the 60s, I believe. Here's one from 1954. He said, the knowledge of how to live should be the first interest of every person. And then he went on to explain how that this is divided into the physical and the spiritual. How that we ought to strive for vigorous, clear-minded, perfect health physically. And then, of course, obeying God's spiritual law, the Ten Commandments. How to live? What good is a university education if you can't come out of the university knowing how to live? Forget about making a living. Or forget about this this agenda, this left-wing agenda that's so common on the campus today. What about living according to God's standards, according to the truth of God? Well, he talked about those that aren't even getting a basic education, but then he goes on to talk about the problem, even if you're getting the reading and the writing and the arithmetic and perhaps learning how to make a living, still there's something criminally wrong. Here's what he went on to say, clip two.
But I mean something far more serious than that. Sure, young people in high school and college are being taught certain vocations and professions. Young men and young women are being taught about material and physical things. They're being given certain social and cultural training. They're being prepared to earn a living. At least many of them are. But listen, my friends, they are not being taught how to live.
That's what Herbert Armstrong specialized in, and he raised up three colleges on two continents, and he taught young people how to live. How to live. How to follow in the steps of Jesus Christ. The scriptures say about him, Jesus, as a young man, that he increased in wisdom and stature. He increased in favor with God and man. He was wise and discerning. He had understanding. He reached a full level of maturity and responsibility. And the child grew, it says, and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. That's from Luke chapter 2. Jesus was truly educated according to God's laws. He lived a life without sin. He obeyed that perfect standard that is revealed in the law of God, the Ten Commandments. Perfect in health, physical and spiritual. And God says, through the Apostle Peter, follow in those steps. Notice what it says in Proverbs 3. I'll just take you through a few verses here. We read these in class on Tuesday. But here in Proverbs 3, verse 1, it says, my son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. Don't forget about these commandments, these standards, these laws of God. It says in verse 2, and this is a promise, for length of days and long life and peace shall they add to you. And this is how you extend your life. This is how you lead a life of peace and happiness, of contentment and joy. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them about your neck. Write them upon the table of your heart. This is what God told the Israelites in Deuteronomy 8 and Deuteronomy 6. Write them upon the doorpost. Teach them to your children when they go down to sleep at night and when they walk by the way. Make sure those laws are ever before you. So shall you find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. That's what Jesus found. We read it in Luke 2. He found favor in the sight of God and man. He increased, it says, in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. He grew. He waxed strong in spirit. He was filled with wisdom. God's grace was upon him. God blessed him. That's true education. That's education God's way. That's education grounded in the truth. God's word, the foundation of all knowledge. Verse 5 of Proverbs 3 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not unto your own understanding. Trust in God in all your ways. Acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. That's very similar to the proverb, Proverbs 14 and verse 12, or Deuteronomy 12 and verse 8. When God told the Israelites, don't do what seems right in your own eyes. Don't be wise in your own eyes, verse 7 of Proverbs 3 says. Fear God and depart from evil. Come out of this world. Come out of Babylon. John wrote in Revelation 18, come out from among them. Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 6, come out of this world and its ways, its standards, its morality, and obey God's commands. What does God have to say about what is grossly immoral and what is morally upright? Unless you go to God's perfect standard, everyone's going to have a different opinion. And I mean, you can't keep up with it. It's ever-changing. Man's standard of morality, that is. With God, there's always a consistency, a fairness. It's the same yesterday, today, and forever. There was an article in The Atlantic a few years ago that talked about the benefits of character education. I mean, that's a good title. That attracted our attention here at God's College. Okay, character and education. I like the sound of that. And there's quite a lot of good stuff in this piece. It's from 2013. It says schools that teach character education report higher academic performance, improved attendance, reduced violence, fewer disciplinary issues, reduction in substance abuse, and less vandalism. Well, those are good things, are they not? You mean someone of good character is less likely to be violent, to have disciplinary problems, to be addicted to drugs, to miss out on class? It says, at a time when parents and teachers are concerned about school violence, it's worth noting that students who attend character education schools report feeling safer because they know their fellow students value respect, responsibility, compassion, and hard work. It says, from a practical perspective, it's simply easier to teach children who can exercise patience, self-control, and diligence, even when they would rather be playing outside. In other words, if you're obedient, you're easier to work with. Imagine that. If you're disciplined, you can learn faster. Imagine that. Should be common sense. She talks about the Founding Fathers. This is The Atlantic, 2013. American schools used to focus on character education and civic virtue. The founders of this country, including John and Abigail Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and Benjamin Franklin, wrote about the importance of character education in maintaining the new republic. Those founders would likely be horrified by the loss of this goal, as they all cite character education as the way to create an educated and virtuous citizenry. So here's where she begins to veer off course. I like that she refers back to the founders, because she's right. John Adams, his wife, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, they understood the importance of character education. But let's take it a step farther than that. What did they say you needed to look to develop the right character? Religion and morality. You can't separate those two. But that's what this woman attempts to do at The Atlantic. She says later, character education is not old-fashioned, and it is not about bringing religion into the classroom. So it's not about the Bible. We are not talking here. We want people to be upright. We want them to be of fine character, but we are not talking about a Bible-based education. Not at all. We have long since abandoned that. We have rejected that. It has to remain out of the classroom. We can't bring it in. Separation of church and state. But that's not in the Constitution. It doesn't matter. We've established that it's got to be separate. It's got to be kept out. You've got to try to erase God from the Declaration of Independence. You've got to try to erase the fact that John Adams said that you can't have a stable society without religion and morality. Where do we get the right virtues? Where do we get the consistency from one standard to the next? Only if the Bible is the bedrock, only if the Bible is the foundation, are you going to have one standard for all. And it's clear and it's straightforward. There's a simplicity there, as Paul said in 2 Corinthians. But he said in that same passage, "And I'm worried about you, brethren, that you're getting away from the simplicity that is in Christ." Look at our world today. Look at where we are. Look at what we're struggling with in the United States. Look at the sins that are bringing us down. Look at the moral rot. Look at the decay. To paraphrase again what Mr. Hilliker said there at the end of his trumpet brief. Those three stages, every society has its period of growth, the zenith, the peak of its power, and then decay sets in. Is there any doubt about where we happen to be? The United States? Great Britain? Mr. Armstrong continued in that same message from back in the 1960s. Here's clip three.
So, today's popular education has no place for God or divine revelation. No, you don't find divine revelation being taught in the average institution of learning today. The institutions of higher learning are very few and far between where the Bible is taught at all. Today, modern education is almost wholly materialistic. It has lost sight of the true spiritual values. It fails to teach young men and women the most needed knowledge of all, and that is what life is, what it's all about, why we're here, what is the purpose of life, why were we put here, where are we going, and what are the laws, how to live happily, how to arrive at that destination. That's the foundation of knowledge. That's the beginning of knowledge. How to live happily, how to have peace. My friends, the great rulers of the world don't know that.
That's Herbert Armstrong from his old radio program talking about modern education, how that it's almost wholly materialistic. That's what we discuss at the end of the semester in our Principles of Living class here at God's College. Intellectual materialism in education. The absorption of German rationalism into the educational bloodstream, Mr. Armstrong used to say. This article, we pulled this up from the Daily Oklahoman years ago. It's almost 20 years old now, but this was a guy quoting from Oklahoma's School to Work Week. This is educational standards. For Oklahoma schools, Oklahoma's a pretty conservative state, most would say. But it talked in this manual about how the objective of education is basically job training. The primary purposes of education is to prepare young people for employment. I mean, this is from 20 years ago. A lot of schools would agree with this today. It's just to get them ready to make money, okay? Nothing else. And then this author writes, employment, though important, is one component of life. Students must be truly educated, not trained like circus animals. We must prepare them not merely to make a living, but to make a life. That's essentially what Mr. Armstrong said decades earlier. It's almost like this author read from Mr. Armstrong's writings. Education is not about how to earn a living, but rather how to live. How to live according to God's laws. What good is all the money in the world if you can't make a happy life? If you can't build a happy marriage, if you can't raise obedient, contented, happy children. Well, switching back to Mr. Armstrong, look at what he said. This is what he said in the foundational policy of Ambassador College. He said, education and the world of its creation has lost all knowledge of the purpose and true meaning of life. He alluded to that in that last clip that I just played. He then goes on and talks about the materialistic progress, you know, all of the technology. And yet at the same time, there's so much unhappiness. He said people are discontented. There's boredom. There's moral, spiritual, and educational decadence. He says, with all this progress, quote unquote, it remains a hard, cold fact that never before was the world filled with so much discontent, unhappiness, and suffering. Never so much ill health, mental disturbance, frustration, and suicide. Even in the high living standard nations, I mean, even in our prosperous nations, you look at the divorce. You look at the evil, you look at the suffering, look at those stats that I gave to you yesterday about just how ubiquitous pornography is. Mr. Hilliker alluded to that in his trumpet brief. It's everywhere, but that's moral. I mean, that's moral. It's a deceived world. Revelation 12 and verse 9. Where are there any true values? True as God defines them to be true. The new is not even new, is it? God's morality, God's standard of morality, that's the one standard we want to hold to. Well, I'll leave it to you to read Romans 1. That's a passage we go through quite a lot in our Principles of Living course, where God, through Paul, explains there what happens. What happens when you leave God out of the educational system? He says that you're then just left you're left with minds that are void of judgment, reprobate minds. God just gives them over to minds void of judgment. And then, of course, they get into all sorts of vile behavior. It's right there in Romans 1. Read the whole chapter, particularly the second half of it. I'll conclude here with what Mr. Armstrong wrote in the Wonderful World Tomorrow book. He said, modern education trains students to earn a living in the professions, occupations, and vocations. And here again, you look at the situation as it is today, and you wonder how well they're even being prepared for the vocation. In any event, he continues, but it fails to teach them how to live. It commits the crime. It is a crime. Of developing the machine, but it fails to develop the man. He says, finally, in modern education, we find perpetuation of false values, the teaching of distorted history, warped psychology, perverted arts and sciences, worthless knowledge. So much worthless knowledge, just like that list of the latest, so-called greatest courses in the university today. Well, God is preparing. He's preparing teachers at his colleges right now to teach this world true values. Mr. Armstrong brought this out in a sermon that he gave back in the 1980s, I believe. Here's clip 4.
Ambassador College is merely to call and to teach and to train people for the work of the church. And the purpose of the church is to call people that God has called and God selects them to be educated, to be taught now as students, so that we can become teachers when God does start to save the world. The world has to be taught how to live. The world has to be taught how to cooperate. And they have to be taught that they have to have a head, a leader, who is God.
Hopefully you could make that out clear enough, but that's him from a message he gave back in the 1980s, talking about how the church, the members of God's church, are being called and prepared and trained to teach this world how to live. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll conclude today's show, going through a few emails that have come in over the last week. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Here's some email feedback coming in from California. It says, I greatly appreciated your episode regarding our vocation and using your time wisely and not being consumed with entertainment. My wife and I consider your program the highlight of our day. Your episode today was quite enlightening. Being married for just over a year, my pre-marriage days, I thought I was well-balanced. I did my expected chores after work, cooked my meals, performed my daily studies, including a pretty strong prayer life, and then finally relax to an hour or so of television each night. And then came a wife who I later discovered watched almost no television. The first few months were a challenge for me. Rather than pushing TV into our marriage, I allowed the marriage to fall into alternative activities, such as discussing recent church messages we just heard, Bible study together, catching up on the latest news articles, discussing news events together, or just doing more outdoor activities. He says here, a trait in my wife I didn't realize actually was a blessing. I didn't expect nor see until months later. Now the definition of a virtuous wife has more meaning than before. I think this is what God was preparing for me with this. He goes on to talk about his vocational calling and just how special his wife has been to help him step it up even more. A great email there from California. This one here in response to my father's trumpet brief from last week, where he weighed in on the announcement by President Trump about Jerusalem, moving the embassy there, and recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. This reader says, you're in my daily prayers, Mr. Fleury. Thank you for printing God's truth. One day soon, we will observe the feast in Jerusalem. Another one here says, thank you so much for this brief. Though short, it's brimming with hope. And then another one, thank you very much for your valuable information regarding the end times, valuable and pivotal prophecies. Another one just says simply, great article. And then another one here, dear Mr. Fleury, as soon as I saw the announcement by President Trump, I knew that this was God's hand. Thank you for your enlightened messages. Soon we will see the Prince of Peace enter his city. What a glorious day that will be. Here's another one in response to that program on television. I think that was Monday. I hold the same views about American TV and, for that matter, most of the TV of the world. This medium of communication also has been hijacked by the God of this world to propagate moral filth and to propagate ungodly messages and the ungodly way of life. I do not even watch television. That's coming from another one of our listeners. Here's one that says, thank you for this. Correction, wisdom, and understanding. I will meditate and pray on this subject. This one here in response to the EU's superpower megalomania, I believe that was Richard Palmer's trumpet brief from Tuesday. It says, thank you. I really appreciate getting the trumpet brief every day. Have a blessed week. And then another one in response to that says, I appreciate a good laugh while reading the trumpet brief every now and then. I think Richard does a pretty good job of throwing in a humorous line every once in a while. Good for him. Another one says, greetings, Mr. Palmer. Great analysis of the events unfolding in Europe. Absolutely on track to the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. May God bless your work. Another one says, very good reading. I enjoyed it. Thank you. And then there was a couple that came in here Brad McDonald's trumpet brief from Wednesday, Jerusalem, Trump, and Israel's Pyrrhic Victory. It's from December 13th. How refreshing to hear the voice of truth in this troubled, deceived world. Every day, I appreciate the astounding gifts God has handed over to us freely, asking so little in return. I'm now able to tune in to much of the work from my cell phone, and I just can't get enough of it. Here's an example of someone using the gadgets for the right things. And it is tremendous what you can do with a phone or with your laptop or your device. If you can get at the trumpet or the podcasts or the programs, there's so much that God's work makes available. This one here says, like many, I was delighted last week when U.S. President Donald Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Quite a lot of response to that series of trumpet briefs and those programs that we produced last week. And then this final one, this was just a general comment of support and encouragement. Thank you for another great source of biblical information not available anywhere else on earth. If you'd like to submit some feedback or send an email in response to any of these programs or in response to the trumpet brief, you can just simply hit reply to the trumpet brief. Or if you'd like to respond to one of the programs you're listening to, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're putting the finishing touches on yet another week of broadcasting on KPCG and kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.